Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, we're talking about... Let you go ahead and explain it again.
It's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Well,
trying to
reduce the discussion. You know, we're a commentary show, not a news show. So the news shows always look in the rearview mirror, look at what happened yesterday, look at whatever the weather calamity was, whatever the war in Ukraine situation is, whatever happened to the stock market and the economy, and if there was a murder, where was it, and who shot John. And so I'm saying, well, you know, that's all yesterday, and what we ought to be looking and worry about is tomorrow. And as commentary, we ought to be trying to help people figure out, well, what do we want tomorrow to look like, and how does whatever is happening square up with what we would like tomorrow to look like? Well, the first thing we got to do is figure out what do we want tomorrow to look like and what's important. And so what I've asked you to do, and me and the listeners, is okay, let's just say that the United States is one big family, because politicians always want to tell us that we need to balance our budget like a family. We need to plan for ourselves like we're a family. We need to constrain what we do because we have finite resources. Well, we do. We're one big wealthy family, but we're a very big family, and everyone in the family is not, in fact, living in the same household in the same level of wealth. Well, how do we prioritize this as a family? What are the most important things? Tom called in. I think he was right. We got to look at basics. We got to look at, do we all have housing? Do we all have health care? Are we all healthy? Do we all have food? Do we all have education? So
shelter.
Shelter, yeah. So we've got to make sure that we've addressed all of the basic things. What are the basic things? Those are the highest priority things. And it rolls off our mouth pretty quickly when we talk about our family. It's, you know, are we protecting our health? Are we protecting our safety? Are we protecting the access to food? Do we have shelter? Are we looking out for the education of our children, because that's the future of our family? Are we doing all those things? And then we need to figure out how we should allocate our money with respect to that. We also have our parents and grandparents. Are we taking care of their futures, their retirements?
You know, Sandy, the first response I said was children, the future of our nation, and that should definitely be a priority. And then health. I think when you look at what is happening in our nation, as far as whether or not our nation is focusing enough on making sure that what we put in our mouths, making sure what we grow, making sure, you know, what we eat, that those are all the right things, and that those things are safe.
Mm-hmm. Well, surely, I mean, as a family, we worry about what we put on the table, right?
Right.
How we feed ourselves. And I just think we need to break things down to some, this more basic way of thinking, which would, you know, is make our community, first of all, make us think about a community and a big family. In America, I think many people's instinct is to say, well, I'm taking care of my family. You take care of your family. Well, you know, that isn't quite the way the community works, you know, because everyone's got different starting points. And the fact is that the children of our community, not just the children of my family and your family, the children of our community are our future. And they will interrelate to and affect the future of one another, just as the current generation we have is interrelating to and affecting one another. And I think we would all hope that our future generations would interrelate to and affect one another in more positive ways than we are.
And the reason that's so important is long-term, that's going to have to happen for there to be a long-term future for our nation.
For the United States of America.
There's no question whatsoever. Let's go to Dave from Milwaukee. Hey, good morning, Dave. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, good morning, guys. I like this concept. And I love this concept of, you know, that we're one big family. But the elephant in the room with this idea is a significant portion of the population, and it seems to be about one-third of the population, are racists. They're white supremacists. They do not see us as one big family. I mean, look at our history. The Europeans came here and annihilated the Native Americans. Then they brought over African-American slaves, and we had a civil war over that issue. And that battle was lost, but the racists, the people who benefited from slavery, even though that battle was lost, they continued the war, and we are still in that war today.
Dave, I certainly agree with you that we've got some dysfunctional aspects to our family. But then the question is, if we can identify, let's say, a third of our children, you went to the number that high, let's say a third of our children disrespect and otherwise treat the rest of the family in or some of the family in a very negative light. Well, we could banish them from the family, but then they're on the outside looking in, and we know we've lost the community, we've lost the family. Our dysfunctionalism has destroyed the family. Or we could have family counseling. We could figure out ways that would bring into the family the kind of help and support that's needed to get the family more functional and to help those 30% who are seeing things in such a negative light, help them evolve into something that is a better part of the family, right?
You know, Sandy, religion was supposed to do that.
Well, but unfortunately,
right,
religion has been turned in many respects to being a tool for that.
Right.
Based on some religions deciding that what they should really focus on and who should be excluded from heaven, who should be excluded from salvation, who should be excluded from their religious coverage, you know, depending on sexual orientation or whatever. And so, but that's part of the dysfunctional family. So when we gotta, if we really are committed to this concept of the united family, the United States of America, then we would be much more committed to figuring out how to deal with one another. And I agree with Dave that I you know, in the confines of a partial family discussion, we can say, look, that part of the family over there is really acting in a very negative fashion. But we can't banish him from the family if we're really going to accomplish the objective.
Well, no. Right. I agree with that. But,
okay.
But so I would like you, if you're going to keep up with this, focus on, I think this is like the biggest problem in getting this sense of family, is reaching those people.
Yes.
They can be reached. I agree, but it's going to be a hard row to hoe.
Well, they can they be reached? I'm question mark, but I think they can. And I think it has to do with helping them develop a much broader sense of family, because as de Tocqueville long ago noticed, we have this sense of individuality in America, and that sense of individuality allows everyone to pat themselves on the back about how well they've done and to look at anyone who's failed to do as well as they have and look down their nose at them and say, look, all you got to do is get off your bottom, get up and do what I did, work hard, and you'll get to where I am. And that's sort of been the American outlook on things, regardless of the impediments that have been put in the way of some of those people which have made it impossible for them to even get up off the ground, much less do what they need to do.
It is a different view from being one of those people. And so we see the nation through a different lens and through a different prism. And so we want to see that change. And because we haven't seen that change. And we know that none of this can happen without that change.
Right.
And so Dave's position, I think, is correct, because we can't plan to move it all forward unless it's going to be all for one and one for all. And wanting my brother for my brother what I want for myself.
Right. I mean, you know, in a big family, some of the kids are dyslexic, can't read.
Right.
So we need to help them figure out how to work their way through this dyslexia. Some of them are slow. Some of them, you know, we've got all kinds of issues to deal with in our family. But what we can't do is have a bunch of the kids in the family who we simply decide for some superficial reason, like, I don't know what, their ears are too big or whatever, that they're going to do only yard work and they're going to clean up the basement on Saturday. And they're not going to get the rest of the advantages.
So, but Sandy, therein is at the root of the experiment that we are talking about right now.
Yep.
Getting past that. If we can begin there, then there's hope for all of this. But as Dave stated, we've got to bring that one third into the fold. They can't be, you know, continuing to, through their beliefs, poisoning others.
And can I say something?
Yes, sir.
You know, we have to deal with the forces that want to keep things the way they are. You know, in a capitalist system, it's very useful to have a divide and conquer situation in our society. And, you know, we have to deal with that, too. This is not just some passive thing that happened accidentally. It's intentional.
Well, Dave, I would, you know, intentional is a loaded word, and it sounds like malice aforethought. I'm not sure that's quite the way it works, but there are definitely incentives in any system, and the incentives do tend to lead to an outcome, and we have to be careful about evaluating and very, very wise about evaluating just what kind of incentives we've built into our system.
You don't think there's that the capitalist forces use divide and conquer to keep people oppressed?
No, I don't think.
They don't?
No, I think that might be an outcome. I don't think it's the purpose or intent of it, no.
Hey, all my reading, there's a lot of scholarship on that.
Hey, Dave, thank you very much for the call. Wish I had more time. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. What say you? We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. It's Monday. Mondays with Sandy Williams. We're trying something a little different. And we would certainly like to have you join in the conversation. It's a thought-provoking conversation that Sandy has brought to the table about planning. Instead of reacting to things, if we had the ability to plan for the future of this nation, and we were all under one roof, and we were all, in fact, the family of the United States, and what would you do? What would be the priorities?
I think Tom had the right idea. If you were going to sit down and you had a chalkboard in front of you for the family at the table, you say, okay, let's plan how we're going to spend our money, and let's. The first thing you'd say is, well, we all have to have food. We got to be able to eat. We got to have water, food and water. So we need an infrastructure that's going to supply us with the necessities. We need food. We need water. We need electricity. So we need the lifeblood of what it is that we actually require day to day to make it from day to day.
Good food and good water.
Yes.
Not just food and water.
Yes. Absolutely. As a family, we need to have good food, good water. We need to have the infrastructure, electricity, and of course, then in order to get all that, mom and dad have to work, so they have to be able to get to work. So we need the infrastructure on which they can get to work. So they need that system to be available to them. We need housing. We absolutely need housing. That's so we've struck food, water, housing, and the infrastructure necessary to support day-to-day life as absolute necessities. Then we need health care. We need to survive from day to day, and we certainly need health care for our newborn children who are going to get all of the childhood illnesses that could potentially take their lives. You know, back in the days before modern society, a majority of kids didn't get to adulthood. You know, there were too many things standing in the way of getting there. So I don't know if it was a majority, but a significant percentage of children never made it to adulthood. Now we want to make sure our children make it to adulthood, so they need health care. And mom and dad have to work to provide this stuff for them, so they need daycare. Okay, they need to be taken care of during the day so that mom and dad can go off and make the money necessary to provide the housing and the rest of these things necessary for them. So now we've got these are the most basic things, okay? And then what else is basic? That's what I want to challenge people. Say, let's set out a priority. We can say number one priority, water, because you can't live without water. Number two priority, food. You can't live without food very long. Number three, housing. You can't live without housing very long. Number four, you need
education.
You need infrastructure so you can get those. But you need education so you can actually get a job. So now you've got education as a requirement. You need to take care of the kids so that they don't, and you need health care. So we need some of these very basic things that can go up as a family. We would put down as the very first things we need to make sure we've got. And then we need safety. So, you know, so we need, what do we need for safety? Well, we need maybe something to make sure that our house doesn't get broken into. We need windows and locks. We need maybe...
Sandy, people look at those things as we are now in today's world. People look at those things in their own families and individually. Mm-hmm. You're asking that that be looked at as a collective.
Community. Yeah. It seems to me that if we are a community, if we are a United States of America, first of all, we have to understand that we are interrelated to one another. And if that isn't obvious to us now, it ought to become obvious to us because, you know, the violence and poverty of the cities is affecting all of us. The failure of generations of people to succeed is creating a drag on all of us, okay? It's a problem for all of us. So if we only look at it even from that selfish downside, we all have an interest in making sure that we as a family succeed and that everyone in the family succeeds sufficiently to have independent lives.
You know, Sandy, the conversation has to start somewhere. And this is, I would say without question, a conversation that makes people uncomfortable.
Well, I think it does because the idea that we're all a family causes some people to say, well, I'm a family, but maybe I don't want to include those
right.
people, well, whoever those people might be. And it might make us sit up and realize that we are trying to push out of our family, have outcasts, people who we don't really have a very good reason for doing that.
And so it is at the root of that that has to be looked at. And I know there are people listening right now who are wrestling with that. And because it's you know, to ask, it's never been asked before,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I think one of the things, one of the rules for the family ought to be we can't banish people from the family. So if we've got some nasty sorts who are wanting to ignore and push out of the family some other parts of the family, we have to deal with helping them see things better as well as keeping the people from being banished.
You know, we all have black sheep of our own families.
Sure, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And it's difficult enough sometimes to, in our own families, people have, you know, aggrieved us in such a manner that we have to learn that lesson ourselves, let alone on a broader scope.
Right.
But we must. that's something that has to be done, and that healing has to take place.
Yeah, and inside the family, I always say blood is thicker than water. You don't have to love your brother, but you gotta keep his back.
Yeah,
cover his back,
and don't let somebody else mess with him.
Yeah,
because you'll come to the rescue.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you and his relationship is. Just don't let anybody else do that. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And, I tasked Sandy to come up with a conversation for this morning. And he came up with a different idea. And so we love to have you join us in this conversation. Sandy, for those who are just joining us, let's go over it again.
Well, what we're doing is trying to broaden the analysis of what's happened yesterday into thinking about tomorrow and thinking about what's important for tomorrow, and then how do we prioritize
for this nation.
For this nation and for us. I mean, let's convert thinking. I'm saying let's think about us and then let what's important to us, and actually what we ought to do is realize that what's important to everyone is what's important to us, that we have a broad community, and that we should think about our nation as a family, just like politicians will frequently, when it's convenient for them, talk about the nation as a family that must balance its budget, that must establish how we spend our money. Okay, well, let's do that. Let's see how we would, if we were a large family, spend our money, and are we spending it that way now, and are we focused on the right set of important issues, and have we been focused on the right sort of issues if we really were thinking of ourselves as a broad community and a family? And I guess I would assert that the current way we focus our political attentions and the current things that we accomplish politically and the way we spend our money currently does not reflect a sense of community and a sense of broad family that would reflect if we all thought that way.
You know, Sandy, and if ever there was a time, I think the time more now than ever before is a time that you can kind of see that, because people are hurting from different perspectives, urban, rural, and people feel the pain, across the board. So the things that are needed in the urban community are the things that are needed in the rural community.
And actually having the discussion that we're trying to have, let's just pretend we're a family and we've called a family meeting, and all the adult children and all the adults in the family are to sit around a huge table, and we're supposed to talk about just what we're talking about. Well, in the current environment, it would turn into a huge food fight. We'd never get to the discussion. We'd be throwing mashed potatoes at one another, and hopefully we'd keep from throwing utensils that might actually hurt one another during this discussion. So we've got a dysfunctionalism in the family that we've got to deal with to get around to, and we ought to scratch our heads and ask ourselves, why are we so dysfunctional? Why can't we think of ourselves as a broad community? Because plenty of other countries, almost every other developed country, and I think I can safely say every other successfully developed country, has a strong sense of community values that has caused them to have a set of priorities that are reflected in their budgets and reflected in the conduct of how government is conducted, that is much more reflective of family community values.
So let's talk about what that really means. You look at right now, we're so fearful of China. We're so fearful of Russia. We're fearful of those nations because those nations are kind of united in the way they do things, all for one for all, so to speak, more so than we are here.
Well, I guess. I mean, to be honest with you, our fears of them strike me as the primal fears of the caveman who's afraid to come out of the cave because of some imagined danger that they see out there. You know, Thor, the god, is going to bring a thunderstorm down and strike them with lightning, and they can't come out of the cave. And then pretty soon they start coming out of the cave, and they realize it's not really so likely. That's not really going to happen. That was a fear that wasn't warranted. We seem to be operating our budget premised on a whole bunch of fears for safety that I think are imagined, right? So we talk about Russia being a fearful entity for us, or China being a fearful entity for us, when the fact is that our house, this house that's bounded by the Atlantic and the Pacific, that's bounded by a peaceful neighbor Canada and a peaceful neighbor Mexico, we just don't have a rational fear for invasion or actual safety. So most of the fears that we've developed in that are theoretical fears, not actual.
Well, and these things go back to our parents in the Cold War. And so maybe back then, maybe the fears were legitimate.
Well, no. I would assert that the fears weren't very legitimate then.
Then either, huh?
Why would Russia, just if we scratch our heads and do an analysis, why would Russia send nuclear missiles over to the United States to try and wreak destruction on the United States? Were they going to come and try and occupy the United States? No.
Right.
No. The only reason that there was that discussion and that danger is that we had nuclear missiles, which they believed we might, in a peremptory way, send over to them to wreak havoc on them. Why would we wreak havoc on Russia? Was it because we wanted to occupy them? No. Well, we did have a fear of their political system coming out of the Depression when the Communist Party in the United States was an active and legitimate entity, and so there was, well, I think, probably a paranoid fear that was ideological about that. But you know, these fears were imagined.
So we can't begin to repair any of the other things until we first get that discussion worked out.
Well, I think so. That's where when I brought this up, I thought we would ultimately come to rest on the fact that we, as a household, are spending far too much money on safety for the household, because we're spending a lot of money on imagined fears. We don't just have a burglar system to keep our house from being invaded, and we aren't actually even adequately spending money on the local safety issues to deal with the unrest and problems and the safety of our cities, right? We have safety problems in all of our cities, but we're spending an enormous amount of money of our household money to protect us against very distant and imagined fears
that we clearly could never have afforded in the first place, but we've tolerated it because we felt and deemed it necessary, again, without having any real understanding of whether it was a threat or not.
I would say, I would keep coming back to Dwight Eisenhower. The people now want to look at those words, and I don't know what to say, that Dwight Eisenhower wasn't wise enough to. But in his last speech as president, he warned the American public that the military industrial complex, this group of people inside government that constituted the military and intelligence agencies, had a highly vested interest with respect to their own power and authority in promoting the interests of and the notion of danger that was sufficient to require that we have a great deal of military armament, so that we developed a theory in America starting in the 60s that we needed to have enough, we needed to spend enough in defense annually so that we would be in a position to wage war on three fronts. That was actually the predicate for our notion of how much do we need to spend. And the amount of money that we spend on our military, in spite of the fact that we have the biggest moats in the world, we have the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean separating us from our danger, we spend a multiple of, you know, 20 times as much as anybody else.
You know, Sandy,
per capita.
If the American people would come to the realization that So whatever it is that our differences are, and they really don't really amount to a whole hill of beans.
Differences where?
One with the other, reconciling.
Within the country?
Yeah, within the country.
Yeah.
One with the other and understood what's at the root of all these different things. Then we could, you know, people listening right now could say, hey, I agree that what we've been dealing with is this fear that we really don't know what's at the root of it. And so I've said it many times. I'm not worried about the Russians coming over. I'm not worried about the Chinese coming over. I mean, well, because again, we already have strong enough deterrence.
Well, I think as a family, first of all, we'd get to this dinner table, we'd start having this food fight, and we'd realize that we better solve for the discord that's causing the food fight first before we even have the discussion, because we can't even get to discussion with the food fight, okay? And that's politically what we've got going on and what we've had going on for the last 15 years is a food fight,
right?
Okay? And then once we solve for the food fight, we'd begin to say, well, we better solve what's really endangering us locally, you know, what makes our house dangerous. And we would start solving for the local safety issues and poverty issues that are connected to our safety issues. We'd start solving for that at a very high level of priority instead of ignoring them.
Well, let's say this, because we keep looking for it to be fixed politically. It's not ever going to be fixed politically, right? What's happening right now, what we're dealing with is, well, should I vote Democrat? Should I vote Republican? Should I do this? Should I do that? That's not going to change any of it.
All it does is decide who's going to throw mashed potatoes and who's going to throw peas. You know, and you know, it sets up the alliances at the dinner table to see whether...
It continues the separation.
Yes. Continues the process of making dinner table conversation impossible.
So that really is... I mean, all you see right now is the midterms are coming. It's not that the Russians are coming,
right,
or the Chinese are coming. It's the midterms are coming.
Well, when the midterms are coming, then we have to figure out how we're going to both frighten them. How are we going to try to catch people's attention to get them to vote for us? Because us being in power is really the fundamental thing that we're chasing with respect to this. And we're not fundamentally chasing a solution to the family's problems. We're just trying to decide who sits at the dinner table with the gavel to decide what it is the family can talk about.
So I'm trying to watch the football game Sunday, and I see two or three commercials talking about the other guy. And then there's two more commercials coming back from the other side.
Yeah.
Nothing else, no other commercials, five straight commercials. All that money being wasted trying to tell me who I should vote for, as if they're going to somehow address the issues that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that when they beat that drum and the voice comes over to tell you why it is that it's such a serious consequence that you don't vote for X and you must vote for Y, I'm not sure that stuff that they try to deal with there is even our important stuff.
No, it's not. This is my point. It's not. But when you can't think beyond that,
mm-hmm,
which is what we're talking about right now, beyond that, and that's the way it's always been all your life, it's a hard thing to wean yourself from, right?
Right.
I mean, it clearly is, because now we're sounding like, ooh, some people from a different planet. People are wondering, hey, what happened?
Well, I'm interested, you know, we have callers that frequently call in, CJ and Lou from Cudahy and others who represent different parts of the political spectrum. But I'm interested how they would discuss what we're talking about now in the context in which we're talking about it, and not in the context of talking points on who shot John last week, but rather what should be important to us going forward. Because what do people on various parts of the political spectrum, what do they hold most important? What are the priorities, if they would place them, that our government ought to make sure that we're covering the base of?
So look, I think we've got a brilliant young guy in here, and we'll ask Connor what he thinks.
Yeah,
you know, he's representing the future, and when we come back, we'll certainly let him speak. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy was given the task to...
I had an assignment, Earl. Did I do my homework?
I thought it was important that we you know, have Sandy decide what we talk about today. And Sandy is cerebral, a guy as he is, went into something that really makes you want to think. I mean, you have to think about the answers to what he is requesting of us, and yet think hard, and you've got to get your emotions out of the way, and you also have to get politics out of the way, and everything is about politics. And so when you try to think about these things without thinking about it from the perspective of a Democrat or a Republican or a conservative or a liberal or any of those things, and you peel back the veneer of what those things have done to people and kind of put us in these categories.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the notion was that we should talk about the United States, and we should talk about our discourse ought to be all about, as if we are one big family, what are our priorities, how do we spend our money, how do we focus our attention, what do we do? And, you know, I suppose one of the preliminary questions before we even start the discussion is, can we have the discussion? Can we have a rational and peaceful discussion, or will it be a food fight?
Right.
And you know, what I've posited here is that currently I don't think we can have this discussion out there in the real world, because we always end up with a food fight.
Well, the sides.
We end up with a who shot John analysis rather than a forward looking. Let's put down our mashed potatoes and our utensils and stop throwing things, and let's talk about this peacefully, and let's figure out what's important and what isn't.
Well who's right and who's wrong? I mean, that's it comes down to.
Well, but you need to think about, and then if people feel uncomfortable
it's not,
about
it's not right and wrong.
Right.
But, go ahead.
But some people might feel uncomfortable about sitting down at a table where the ground rule is that we got to think about us as one big family. So then we ought to put that on the table. Okay, why don't you want to think about us that way? And how do you want to think about us for the purpose of planning politically? Because that's an important thing for us to evaluate. Most of the successfully developed countries in the world have been able to think about and develop a mass community interest outlook on some very fundamental things that relate to education, that relate to health, that relate to the general welfare, that relate to pensions and health care generally. And so, you know, we haven't done that. We should scratch our head a little bit and ask ourselves why, and then if not, why should we or why shouldn't we? And part of the discourse problem I've seen, one of the other issues I wanted to talk about today, was this question of repression.
So how
do we gauge the conversation?
Before you go there, let's bring young Connor in. And give Connor an opportunity. Connor? You know what a conversation is?
I've been following the conversation.
What's your thoughts?
I mean, it's a pretty hefty question. It's a pretty loaded question.
Yeah, it
There's
is.
So many facets to society that we have to think about in asking this question.
Well, which of the facets
from a young person's
Yeah, which facets do you want to address first? I mean, that's part of the whole thing is how do we discuss it? What do we talk about first?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing we talk about is just how you know individuals interact with each other on a daily basis and those facets. So, like, I mean, you guys have been talking about this community, right, and access to things like healthcare and education and things, which are the fundamental for an operating community. I think that's the reason why I haven't chimed in much because you guys have been hitting on all the points that I would agree with. The biggest issue comes in how do you create a community where everyone is incentivized properly to trust everyone? Because I mean, people that's in my experience, I guess, the biggest issue. And I think when you had a Dave from Milwaukee call and you guys were talking about this problem. Incentives versus intention, right? And what I mean by that is like, okay, are the systems that we currently have in place right now, like in place with a desired intention to manipulate and curb people toward a specific end, or are they created, right, as a consequence of the systems we live in, right? And I think the first operation is to determine whether, you know, what that answer and how true that, you know, how true both sides are. Because I think it's a mix of both. I think you have certain people that have an intention. I think you have politicians, certain corporate leaders that do have an intention, a very specific intention, whether it's created by profit or created by the typical incentives of the business cycle, whatever it may be, right, who are doing that. Then you have other individuals that operate purely communally based. So, like, just by determining that, right, and then creating a system where we can filter out people that do have those bad incentives, right, that's what I think the very first step is right now. Because you don't really have anything put in place for that. You have anyone, the founding fathers' idea is that any person could become a public servant to some degree. And although that's true to one degree, power has a specific vested interest by people who want to manipulate it. And you create a system like our current system where people are able to operate and start businesses and start the communities by themselves, right? It becomes very difficult to create a community where people are also operating collectively. So that's what I would say.
Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, what you're saying is that we got to figure out how to get the family to sit down and talk to one
exactly,
another.
Exactly, pretty
yeah,
much.
And to admit that they're part of a family and not operating independently and in competitive families. You know, some people would say we're better off being 1,000 competitive families because then we'll end up with the very best families. And others would say, yeah, but that's not going to be a good outcome for the group at large. And, you know,
I mean, I'm also saying that it's a bit more deeper than I think the arbitrary divisions that we make in society now. I think there is merit to the idea that there are other people, there are certain types of people out there that just don't, that can't necessarily understand how empathy works,
but
right?
See,
biologically or through social inclinations. And I think by trying to put up better systems that are able to teach people how to spot people that are manipulating and then also simultaneously require empathy and require that compassion as a fundamental, I think that's the most important thing.
But whether people believe it or not, right now our nation is at a crossroads. And people may not believe that, but it clearly is at a crossroads. And there are different times in our history, Sandy, as you well know, that our nation comes to a crossroad. And we're at one. And so the question becomes, what do we do? Do we continue down the path that we're on right now, which is not going to be successful in the long run? I don't think anybody believes that the way we're headed right now is the future, a positive future for our nation.
Right.
We have to stop, take a strong, hard look at our nation, and shore it up where it needs to be shored up, and also, you know, discard what needs to be discarded. We've got to go to a break.